like a Broadway musical, John's gospel opens with an overture, hints of melodies to come. In one of the most magnificent writings of Christian tradition, it celebrates God's revelation of himself to the world, a theological prologue setting the stage for what is to follow. Now, more than mere words, the word in Hebrew tradition was a big deal, comparable to the Greek logos, which non-Jewish readers in the city of Ephesus would quickly recognize, a brilliant cross-cultural move. The interpreter's one-volume commentary gives insight into the Hebrew understanding. It says, "The word is the wisdom of God reflected in the reason and moral sense of upright men and in the order and beauty of creation." John's prologue summarizes the themes developed in his gospel. Jesus the Christ is the agent of a new creation. In other words, the same awe found in Genesis' creation story. In the beginning, God. Jesus is the life of the world and the light of the world. In that context, hear again that overture. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we have seen his glory, the glory as of a Father's only Son, full of grace and truth. Writing around 95 AD, a third-generation Christian who didn't know the human Jesus, John's lofty vision reminds me of Beethoven writing the Ninth Symphony. Deaf as he composed it, his symphony reached as far as instruments could take it. So beginning the fourth movement, Beethoven introduced four vocal soloists singing parts of Schiller's poem, Ode to Joy, building a crescendo until the chorus exploded in the German equivalent of Joyful, Joyful, We Adore Thee. I still find it so emotional to hear that instrumental buildup as for the first time in major symphonic work, the human voice breaks forth. That is the impact of John's gospel. Theologically, the gospel elevated the earthly human Jesus into the divine sphere, even beyond resurrection, identifying Jesus with the very essence of God, to be in the very beginning with God. A high theology, like helium balloons on the Macy's Day Parade, a commentary looking down onto Jesus' life from high up, even as he places words in Jesus' mouth, all those I am phrases. I am the way, the truth, the life. I am the bread of life. I am the true vine. Those I am phrases, identifying Jesus with the ultimate I am, the very name of God revealed to Moses on Mount Sinai. This is sophisticated stuff. John took his gospel far beyond any thought that had come from Mark, Matthew, or Luke, and causing a lot of confusion in the process, as Jesus began to resemble a Greek god walking around with all the answers in the back of the book. To set the stage for this musical in modern dress, moments still happen that elevate our experience, filling hearts with feelings and emotions beyond mere thought or reason, able to integrate all parts of our faith. Goes like this. In her travels in Palestine, looking for holy places, Bible in hand, Queen Helena, Constantine's mother, came to Bethlehem in search of the birthplace of Jesus. Hearing ancient traditions from the local people there, she was led to a stone manger in one of the caves and decreed it to be the place Jesus was born. under her son Constantine, the Basilica of the Nativity was built in 325, an open-air manger square as its narthex. The first commemoration, by the way, of Christmas on December 25th, taking place in Rome only 11 days later. That was kind of cool. Mostly destroyed in 529 by the Samaritan Revolt, the Emperor Justinian built the present basilica with the caves located beneath the choir of the church. Now, eventually, the huge entrance was reduced, so you had to stoop to enter, not from piety, but to prevent men from riding in on horses and camels. Since the Crusades, the Grotto of the Nativity has been controlled by Armenian and Greek Orthodox, caves on the other side controlled by Roman Franciscans. There, in 1993, an event happened I'll never forget. Making our way downstairs to the always crowded Grotto of the Nativity, we knelt at the place that remembers Jesus' birth, marked by a large 14-point bronze star hollow in the middle with candles and all those Orthodox, lamps always hanging there above it, always there. The stone manger toward the back. Then we went upstairs to the Latin side to descend into their section of the caves. There in the 4th century, St. Jerome had translated the Bible from Hebrew and Greek into Latin, the Vulgate. We'd always find an empty cave to read Luke's story, sing a carol, and, not being a Roman priest, share pre-consecrated bread. To my shock, the entrance to the stairway down into the caves was locked. Never happened before. Very, very frustrating. Irritating as all get out. Trying to make the best of the situation, I said, okay, let's go up to the courtyard and read the story there. I found an arched passageway and asked one of our priests to read Luke's story. But just as she started to read, a sound came up from across the courtyard I'll never forget. An Austrian choir began singing Silent Night. Wait, I said. We stood silently as the carol literally enveloped us. On the second verse, she began to read. And it came to pass in those days, and lo, the angel of the Lord came upon them. Mary kept all these things and pondered them in her heart. Completing the story, just as the choir finished. Suddenly, our guide appeared and whispered, "It's open now." What an incredible moment we would have missed if we'd gone downstairs as planned. During this over-busy time, don't let little irritations get in the way of your own unexpected silent night moments. Listen. Watch. Christmas has just begun. In 2015, we had no such problem. But when I found our cave, it was very dark. The usual dim lights not working. But that's where I'd read Luke's birth narrative, and I don't have it memorized. Suddenly, a bright LED light appeared over my left shoulder, and I was able to read the story, followed by a verse of O Little Town of Bethlehem and Silent Night. Closing the Bible, I looked around to see who had provided the light. It was Kurt, the only Jewish man in the group, husband of a Christian from Palo Alto. From then on, I called him my Gabriel, who was just always there to help. In the new year, don't let God be limited by a narrow view of religion. Open yourself to mystery, to inclusion. For the wonder of the Word made flesh continues to bring light from unexpected sources without regard to origin, enlightening the kind of glorious vision John proclaimed. The German mystic Angelus Lysias said it well. If in your heart you make a manger for his birth, then God will once again become a child on earth. That's how the Word becomes flesh here at St. Luke's. In the spirit of the Incarnation, I wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year with prayers for peace on earth, goodwill.